Hello, and welcome back to Slut PhD. I'm your host, Julie Fennell, and today's episode is about sexuality and BDSM. This is a popular topic that shows up a lot on social media, and I've had many people asking me to do something about it for my podcast, which is a little bit funny because I've written extensively about it over the years on FetLife for some of my blog posts there, as well as having an entire chapter on it in my book, Please Scream Quietly, A Story of Kink, which I will be drawing heavily from for this episode. If you find yourself wanting to cite anything that I mention in this episode, I encourage you to please cite the book. This is chapter 2 in the book. I'm not going to be just reading it straight from the book, but I am going to be drawing heavily from it. I am going to inject a lot more of my own personal experiences and anecdotes into this episode than I was really allowed to do for my book. So hopefully it'll be a little bit more fun and colorful from my own experiences. So the thing that I always think about with regards to sexuality and BDSM is one of the later scenes in the 2002 kinky romantic comedy Secretary. And in it, the main character played by Maggie Gyllenhaal is sitting at a table and she's wearing her wedding dress, having just run out on her fiance. Because she really wants this other guy to be her true love and her dom. And he tells her to sit still and not move, and then he just leaves. Like, that's how she's supposed to prove herself. So she's sitting there, she's not eating, she's not drinking, she's not going to the bathroom, she starts hallucinating. Eventually her fiance comes back to her and is mocking her for basically her prurient sexual interest or whatnot. And she stares at him in this really challenging, angry tone and says, "Does this look sexual to you?" And the first time I watched the movie, which I think was in around 2002 or 2003, my initial personal response was, yeah, kind of. Like, it even shows her peeing herself in her wedding dress while she's sitting there. But the movie really seems to think that your response should be no. Her response seems to be that this is not sexual. And it's really interesting to me because I've quoted that to several of my friends over the years and found that people have wildly varying responses there, where lots of people are like, yeah, that is definitely sexual. And other people go, well, no. And the lack of consistency in a response to that scene, I think, is incredibly telling. It's also plagued the academic research on BDSM in a pretty big way, where unfortunately most of the people who've been researching it aren't really that heavily involved in BDSM themselves. And so they tend to awkwardly try to adopt one attitude or another in the way that they go about approaching their own analysis of this. And one of the themes that I really try to raise in my book is, you know, just to be clear to all the academics out there, we kinksters don't really know what the relationship between BDSM and sex is. And whenever you see one of those fancy little Instagram posts that someone makes where they're like, BDSM is not sexual, the answer to that is a very qualified, I mean, there's been a lot of effort on many people's part to try to decouple sex and BDSM over the years. And you can see even more of it happening since I wrote my book, because most of my book was actually written in 2019. I updated a little bit before it was published in 2022. But there's been, since COVID, I think, even more efforts a lot of times to decouple kink and sex. Although, for my own personal vocabulary, interestingly enough, I'm just going to throw that out there, I actually distinguish between kink and BDSM for these purposes, where to me, BDSM is this extremely broad category of things. We're going to get to that. And for me, at least, I define kink as BDSM that is sexual. And that's the way I do it for myself, and not the way that I do it in like my published writings. But it helps me to distinguish the way that I understand some activities. I will say that when I first got into the BDSM scene, which was in 2009, I initially was not prepared for the idea that anything about BDSM would be non-sexual. The initial places that I was invited to do BDSM, I said no thank you. Because those places were all places where sex was not allowed. So these were like BDSM spaces that did not permit sex. And I was like, I don't understand why anyone would do this. I'm very confused. And a lot of people have laughed at me when I initially told people when I was invited to those kinds of spaces, oh, I'm not really that kinky, which is hilarious. But when I look back on it, I'm like, well, if those had been spaces where I was invited to come have kinky sex, I would have said sure. But I was very perplexed by the idea of doing BDSM without sex. And to a large degree to this day, I still feel that way personally. But again, for me, I draw a pretty big distinction between BDSM and kink. And I'll talk more about that as I keep going. So, in the early days that I was involved in the BDSM scene, I was initially exposed to it in the New England area, which in the like 2009, 2010 time frame. And in that era, most places up north especially did not allow sex if you were going to a BDSM dungeon. But when I moved to Washington, D.C., I unknowingly landed in the most sex positive BDSM scene in the country for many years. I don't think that that's necessarily true anymore. Especially post-COVID, it seems like a lot of scenes have become more sex positive. And that is a term that the scene itself uses for parties that allow sex. But over time, I found more and more events and parties were slowly allowing sex. But this was a source of a lot of controversy, especially around about 2012, 2013, 2014. You'd see a lot of events that were really arguing about this. And it was really telling that when I first moved to DC and I started doing this research, most of the events here in DC allowed sex, with a notable exception of what I believe was one of, if not the oldest, like big pansexual BDSM event in the country, which was Black Rose. The organization Black Rose still exists, but the event as like a big hotel kink event does not. And I believe the three earliest kink events were Test Fest, which is still held up in New York, and Black Rose. And I heard tell that like Society of Janus out in San Francisco used to do a thing, but I can't speak to that. And most of my research was on the mid-Atlantic area of the United States, although I ended up traveling a lot, so I learned about a lot of other kink scenes as I traveled. But there was a lot of argument over Black Rose not allowing sex at their event, and it closed in 2012. I went to the last Black Rose event, and the general perception in the DC scene at that time was that it had become sort of outdated and obsolete, in part because of its attitudes towards sex. And it left a pretty bad taste, I think, in the mouths of a lot of the local organizers who had had to have this big fight. And meanwhile, there were other events happening in the New Jersey area, which most of them didn't allow sex except for one that did. And it was a whole lot of drama. And people would drama all over FetLife about this and like, what were the implications of allowing sex and what counted as sex? And by far, my favorite of these things was I went to Test Fest in, I want to say, maybe 2017, and they still didn't technically allow sex according to their own policy, but they always did a fist-a-thon in the dungeon. Like, that was allowable and that was totally encouraged. You could fist people, you could have strap-on sex, but you couldn't have sex. It was a pretty arbitrary policy, and by arbitrary, I mean it was always a very penis prohibitive policy. A lot of the original anti-sex policies, a lot of kink events, we're really targeting, like, not wanting to have dicks out in public was what it really came down to. And obviously, as you can probably guess from my name, my username, and the name of this podcast, I have pretty strong feelings about the idea of BDSM events allowing sex, and generally think that that should be something that they permit, ideally encourage. while still, you know, hopefully creating some non-sex spaces away for people who are uncomfortable with that. There are quite a number of people who are asexual and who identify as some degree of asexual, various types of like demisexual-ish people in the BDSM scene. There's been research on this. It's often quite attractive to people who are asexual and graysexual because it allows them to connect physically and emotionally with people in a way that sex sometimes does not for them. And I understand and appreciate that fact. However, I also feel like if BDSM events as passionately countercultural enterprises, that's what they at least aspire to be and what I hope that they mostly are, that to just ban sex at them, I think, can kind of create a lot of baggage. You know, feelings that, you know, sex is dirty, so not here in our space, or we don't do that here. That's for those sluts over there. And also, sometimes the sense of it, like cleaning house, right? That they're trying to clean up the image of BDSM for popular consumption by assuring people that it's not really about sex. So there's at least one popular bondage website that I am aware of that's an educational website that for a while at least was trying to really push the idea that bondage is not sexual. And so, I mean, these ideas are very persistent in the BDSM subculture, and they are often utterly bewildering to everyone outside of it who assumes that, of course, BDSM is sexual. They understand this thing from having watched 50 Shades of Grey. They think that it's about sex, and they're very confused by the idea that there are, you know, bondage events happening in yoga studios now, which there are. But I know a lot of kinksters who are also bewildered and uncomfortable about that fact as well. And so I think there's a lot of tensions going on here. And I want to be clear that I like to try to present the fact that there are two opinions here and that I'm honest about the fact that I have a strong opinion myself here. In my book, I tried to be more neutral in my tone, a lot more neutral in my tone, but this is my podcast episode, so I don't have to be an academic here. You get my opinion. I think the BDSM subculture has a lot of reasons for promoting the desexualization of BDSM, including the idea that I think it makes a lot of the BDSM scene folks think that it makes BDSM look cleaner to the outside world, like I was talking about. Also, a lot of BDSM clubs at least claim that allowing sex at them would be in violation of local laws, which is always surreal because I think every BDSM club I've ever encountered in a major city that claimed that, like, there was a swingers club in that city too, so it was always very strange. But most importantly, I think the scene, the BDSM scene, likes to promote the idea that BDSM is not just about sex, because the more reasons people have for doing BDSM, the more likely they are to keep coming back. The scene wants people to keep coming back. And also, I think there's a little bit of a sorting mechanism going on there where the scene wants people who are prioritizing BDSM, not people who are prioritizing sex and hooking up at their events, in order to create the kind of atmosphere that they're ultimately looking for. And so prioritizing the idea of BDSM being about kink is what really allows for that to happen. But the first thing I want to do to really fuck with some of our ideas and perceptions about this is to just challenge the idea of what it means for something to be sexual in the first place, right? Lots of people hear sex, and coming from a heteronormative paradigm, they think, ah, sex equals penis and vagina, and that's that. Ergo, you know, the BDSM event that forbade sex but still had a fistathon in the dungeon. But if you expand beyond that definition, things start getting tricky pretty quickly. So is it, you know, things that are arousing, like, at all? Is it only things that involve genitals touching? Is it only things that result in orgasm? There's no easy way to define what sex is once you abandon a strict heteronormative paradigm. And especially in Kinkland, things can get pretty fucking weird, right? Because I have personally kicked women to orgasm. I have bitten them to orgasm. I have seen people orgasm who were being whipped. I have also talked to people outside of BDSM contexts who said that they had orgasmed from being tattooed or from having acupuncture. Like, these are things that are not traditionally understood as BDSM nor as sex, and yet clearly had resulted in some sort of sexual stimulation for the people involved. And so, like, what are we defining here as sex? It gets really complicated really fucking fast. As a society, we're incredibly accustomed to desexualizing things that actually look pretty sexual, right? So if you go to a massage therapist, we try really hard to convince you that this is not a sexual encounter in any way, in spite of the fact that getting naked and being touched by somebody with lots of oil on their hands definitely sounds like a potential seduction. Nor do we think that a gynecological exam counts as a sexual experience, even though, you know, somebody sticks their fingers up your vagina and maybe even like pokes around in there a little bit looking for your cervix, say, which sounds a lot like a many sexual encounters that I have had. And the really weird ones are the ones that society almost entirely defines as like therapeutic or non-sexual, but then the kink community has just co-opted for their own purposes. So my favorite of these is cupping, which is associated with acupuncture as a therapeutic technique. And the first time that I had it done, I posted about it on Facebook. I was like, hey, this cupping thing is phenomenal. And one of my friends commented to me afterwards. She was like, she's kinky. And she was like, wow. I was like, oh my gosh, I guess we're oversharing on Facebook now. This was a long time ago. And I was like, what? And she's like, cupping, you know, for like, what are you talking about? Well, it turns out it's the same thing. Like, you do exactly the same thing in either context, basically. It's just the kinky people use it for torturous purposes, and the acupuncturists use it for therapy. And so, that one was really funny to me. Then also, you know, I've gone to BDSM events where lots of BDSM events where people engage in wrestling, and like kinky wrestling feels really different than being at a sporting event, but it looks kind of exactly the same. There's no referee, people aren't dressed. I don't know. It's weird. Like, the things that they're doing are pretty similar, but the spirit of it is very different. They're doing it for fun. Obviously, the key difference there being that you have a safe word. But it's not the same thing anymore, but it is the same activity. And I don't think that most people, when they hear BDSM, think, acupuncture, cupping, wrestling, and waterboarding. It's a pretty quirky set of things, but I've seen all these things happen at kink events. I've seen people at BDSM events, at several BDSM events, walk over hot coals. Again, not exactly classically understood to be the things that kinksters would do. And, you know, over time, I just started to come to define BDSM as, you know, it's whatever kinky people say it is. Not even what mainstream society says it is, but what kinky people say it is. And then just to make it even weirder, kinksters never really came up with a term for this motivation that people have for doing BDSM that ostensibly isn't sexual. And to be fair, I'm going to come down on, say, I don't think that it always is sexual. Part of why I have this distinction for myself between kink and BDSM is because I personally don't find much about the rope bondage that I do, which I'll talk more about in a couple of episodes, to be particularly sexual most of the time. Sometimes it is, but not inherently for me. Like, it's not that much. It's actually less sexual for me than I would say dancing with someone is. And so it's defined as this like erotic, kinky activity. But for me, it's mostly just a form of art and dance. I enjoy it a lot. And I've regularly had people ask me things like, oh, is bondage your biggest kink? And I'm like, I mean, it can be a kink for me, but the stuff that I do most of the time is like very borderline kinky for me. I find rope bottoming to be slightly kinkier than rope topping, I would say. There's a physical, like, masochistic element to it that sometimes I get more of an erotic charge from, but in general, I would say that it's kind of just right next door to the sexy parts of my brain rather than being in the core sexy parts of my brain. And this is part of why I talk about BDSM, which for me is the broad category of bondage and discipline, dominance and submission, sadism and masochism that includes all kinds of stuff. And kinky is being the things that I myself get more of an erotic charge from. And I will add to that, that for me, dominance and submission is entirely sexual, which for many people, it's not sexual at all, which blows my mind. But for me, it's entirely sexual. And even the things about it that other people would probably look at and think, well, that doesn't really look that sexual, like someone kneeling for me, is incredibly sexual for me. Like, there doesn't even have to be touch involved for it to be extremely sexual for me. And in fact, in my brain, if it's dominance and submission stuff, looking stuff, and I don't get a sexual charge from it, I'm like, not that interested. What am I, your mom, just telling you something to do? Like, it has to give me an erotic charge before it really lights up any of the DS parts of my brain. Other people are so different about it. I talk to so many people for whom DS is completely not sexual. And so it's really hard to reconcile these different attitudes. But I think a big part of why it can be so hard to reconcile these things is because kinksters themselves never really named these things. Like, we never came up with a word for, I'm so horny for rope, right? Which is absolutely an experience that I personally have and that lots of people that I know have had, right? Like, a couple of weeks ago, I hadn't been tied up in like 2 months. So, like, I'm going out of my mind because I have not been tied up. I'm going to lose my mind but if someone doesn't tie me up soon, which thank the gods they did. But there's no term, even in kinkland, for I'm so horny to be tied up, even though it's not even sexual for me, really. We never created words for that feeling. We never created words for what it is that motivates us if it's not sex. And yet somehow we came to teach ourselves that these things are quite different from one another. That said, on my survey that I did in 2017, which is increasingly a long time ago now, but at least back then, I found that very few people who answered the survey. It was a very large survey, and while it may be impossible to believe nowadays, back then, literally everyone who was involved in the BDSM scene was on FetLife, pretty much. So it was really easy to recruit people. You couldn't do that again anymore. But back then, I found that only 2% of people with low scene involvement said that BDSM was not sexual for them, 3% for people who are medium involved in the public BDSM scene, and 4% of people who are high involved in the BDSM scene. So, I mean, we're talking about a tiny percentage of people in 2017, at least, who said that BDSM was not sexual for them. And I also asked a whole other set of questions in there trying to gauge other things. So one of the other questions I asked was, I prefer for my BDSM play to include sex. And there too, I find that the level of scene involvement really affects people's responses. And by far, the biggest factor in whether people say they want their BDSM play to include sex is their level of scene involvement. It's not gender, it's not BDSM role, it's not age, it's not a lot of things. These things all matter, but the thing that matters the most is, are you low, medium, or high involved in the scene? And as you get more and more involved in the scene, you are less likely to say that you want your BDSM play to include sex. And so the scene really teaches people to not want sex with their BDSM play. And in addition, it discourages them from actually doing it. So another thing that I asked people was whether or not they had had sex with their most recent new play date. And by far the biggest predictor of whether they had was whether or not they had met them at a BDSM party event or social gathering versus some non-BDSM setting, with the BDSM settings being far less likely to result in sex. And that even included when I separated out BDSM events that allowed sex and BDSM events that didn't allow sex, which in fact were statistically completely the same. So these things had no effect. One of the interesting things about all of this is that femtops and masculine bottoms were also pretty unlikely to say that they liked for their BDSM play to include sex, and also less likely to have it, which is a weird fact that I, of course, have talked around a little bit with masculine submission. I'll get to again in the near future with an episode on femdom. But basically, a lot of that seems to have trickled down from pro-doming, where women aren't allowed to have sex with the clients, sex technically, but also a whole lot of other cultural ideas about how men penetrating women isn't really submissive that we've talked about on here before. But it's really interesting to me that this category of people came to really differentiate their BDSM from sex even more than other groups did. But I hope that you can really understand more if the point where you start broadening the concept of BDSM to include such a wide array of activities, how it gets harder and harder to distinguish between like what that is and what sex is, especially the point where you've also broadened the category of sex. And so trying to think about, like, is BDSM about sex gets harder and harder as you learn to define BDSM very broadly and as you learn to define sex very broadly. And so when I did my interviews all the way back in 2012, which was a very long time ago now, I conducted interviews with 70 folks in the mid-Atlantic BDSM scene and with different ranges of involvement in the public BDSM scene at that time. I asked everyone for their response to the statement, kink or BDSM is not inherently sexual, because this was a hot topic of conversation among scholars at the time. And I was very curious to hear people's take on it. And their ranges of responses were massive. So, this begins with people who were like, that's bullshit. Some of them almost literally. So I'm reading now from my book parts of these interviews. So one woman says, I think everything is inherently sexual. So she was like, well, of course BDSM is sexual because everything is sexual, which is an attitude that I can empathize with. But when another man I interviewed had a really interesting perspective on this. He was one of the BDSM organizers who had been fighting about allowing sex at BDSM events. And he, upon hearing this, his immediate response was, I call bullshit. There is something fundamentally ridiculous about the idea of having a room full of people performing sadomasochistic acts without sex, or at least an acknowledgement that it's titillating and exciting and enjoyable. But over and above that, I have a problem with it in terms of how it represents us in the broader community. I think when people see sadomasochism and the way it's portrayed in the media, and it's like this big sort of scary thing, the easiest way that we can disperse that fear in the vanilla community is just to be like, it's just kinky sex games. People like to dress up as doctor and nurse, or schoolgirl and headmaster, or slave and slave owner, or whatever. We're just role-playing, like sexual fantasies, and we're having a good time. When you take the sex out and you go, no, it's not about sex, then you're just a fucking sadist. You're just somebody that likes inflicting pain on someone, and it's not about sex. It's just about you being an asshole who likes to torture people. What the fuck is that? How do you sell that to vanilla people? It's patent fucking nonsense. It was really interesting to me to hear the passion in his response when I had asked him about this. And also how much it was the reverse of so much of the rest of what I felt like I was hearing in the scene, where it seemed like people were trying to make BDSM more palatable to vanilla people by decoupling it from sex. But I thought this point was pretty compelling. And I interviewed another man who had a similar perspective. He said, I would put that non-sexual BDSM in the domain of the DSM, which is to say the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, and neurotic and psychotic people, antisocial behavior. Because, I mean, even if you're not going to fuck, you should be getting aroused. Interestingly, in the not-so-distant past, I encountered an academic paper where someone tried to distinguish between BDSM sadism versus, which I think they were calling pro-social sadism. I believe if you Google for the paper, that's what you should get. Pro-social sadism as opposed to, you know, this thing that would be in the DSM where you like to hurt people. And psychologists, you know, nowadays trying to distinguish between these things are often struggling with that. Then there was another response away from the that's bullshit, where people would have like more ambivalent responses, a bit like more of what I was talking about for myself. So another man I interviewed said, I guess that under some circumstances, BDSM might not be sexual, but that's probably not the way I would say it. For me, it is inherently sexual, but I can see how for other people it could be inherently non-sexual. And then another great interviewee who was a trans man and a BDSM educator who, when I asked them about this, he said, "I think that that is a profoundly personal statement. I have met some people that kink is so separated from their sexuality that I get confused. And I know other people that kink cannot be separated from their sex life because there wouldn't be anything left. So I think that it is a statement that is really useful for some people, but I think it's not valid as a global statement. Me, how does it feel to you about yourself? Him, I can't think of a kink experience that I've had that has not gotten my dick hard at some point, and therefore for me, it counts as sexual." Meanwhile, I interviewed another woman who was stuck in this quirky situation where BDSM was entirely sexual for her, but not for her male partner. And she says that her boyfriend had asked her to start beating him and flogging him. And while initially a bit reluctant, she found she got into it really fast, added, "I'm really wet and I'm really hot and I really need to get laid now." And he's like, "It's not sexual for him. He likes the sensation. It's not sexual at all." I'm like, is this going to be a problem? Because if you want me to do this, that's fine. I'm okay with it because I get really turned on, but I need to have some release afterwards. And he's like, okay. So people can actually do the same thing together and still not even have the same attitude and experience about what BDSM is in terms of their own sexual experiences of it. And people also would be genuinely confused sometimes when I ask them. So another woman I interviewed, when I asked her if kink was inherently sexual, she said, "I disagree wholeheartedly," then immediately began questioning herself. Well, maybe not. Now that I think about it, no, kink, I think it's possible to be kinky without sex, but there's still an undertone of sex to it. So maybe I disagree. She said that kink was always sexual for her, but her ambivalence was pretty striking. Another woman I interviewed, on the other hand, confused me straight up in her response when she said, "I agree that kink was not inherently sexual. I think that it can be non-sexual. I am a pain slut. I come from pain. I come from topping, which is not as common, but it is a very energetic thing for me, and I'm able to channel that. Historically, I'm stone, which means that she doesn't receive penetration. And the only people I have really had sex with are my owners if I have sex with them. And part of it is because I don't have sex a whole lot. Out of 5 owners, I've had sex with 3 of them." So I was pretty confused listening to that response. And I was pretty confused listening to a number of people's responses. And I really think it's important to highlight the fact that people don't have especially consistent perspectives on this. So I interviewed another woman who, she said that her service kinks, like doing her owner's laundry, ironing his work clothes for him, cooking dinner for him, weren't things that she perceived as sexual, but still perceived as being part of their BDSM dynamic in life. And she said, "It's just enjoyment and pleasure from doing something for somebody else." And then she went on to say, "Of course, something like flogging is inherently sexy. I expect to be fucked afterwards, right? But not all kink is inherently sexual." But then I also talked to other people who, like myself, had had the experience of coming to view BDSM as much more diverse and having a lot more range in terms of sexual expression as they got further into the scene. So another woman I interviewed said, "I had the experience of BDSM being entirely sexual for me when I initially explored it privately. And then I came out in the scene and found out that so many other people use it to explore so many other things. There are people that use it to strengthen their pain tolerance. There are people that use it to work through past issues. There are people that use it to try to see what's coming in the future. There are so many dynamic ways to use this tool to explore things that sexuality is a fairly narrow focus. But it is a useful one, very applicable. Me, would you say that's most of why you do it? Is it related to sex?" Her, "Yeah, that's how I was introduced to me, and that's how I've used it, although I have been interested in exploring whatever paths it takes me on." So you see that people change their opinions sometimes as they're in the scene for longer. And then finally, I talked to a couple of people who straight up said it's not sexual. So one woman says, "Kink is, at least from what I see, it's about an emotional connection that you have with a person and being able to trust them to put you in that vulnerable position, trust them to not go past your limits. to know your limits. And then another man that I interviewed said it's hard to draw the line between sexually arousing and satisfying urges that feel too primal to be intimate and sexual. I'm not saying that I never go there, but yeah, giving and receiving intense stimulation that isn't inherently sexual on its own, targeting erogenous zones for pain and intense stimulation and things like that. I feel like that's a place that's just even more primal than sex, which was a phrase that I thought was really interesting. But my favorite person that I interviewed said, it's like saying, is baseball sexual? No, baseball is not sexual. Are there people who go there and get turned on by both watching and playing the sport? Yes, of course. I get turned on by math sometimes. That doesn't mean math is sexual. Maybe it is for me a little bit, but... And I think that these widely varying responses really help to pull out more about what it is that kinksters themselves just don't understand about what's going on. And so anytime you see anybody making bold claims like, well, BDSM is obviously not sexual, like, that's a pretty complicated thing to say, right? It's not sexual for some people. But it is sexual for most people, and it's very complicated in that even for some people like me, for whom it is quite sexual overall, that like still some things that they really love to do maybe aren't sexual for them. And I, in general, personally find that topping, distinct from domination, which for me is entirely sexual, topping is often not that sexual in general, whereas bottoming, especially non-rope bottoming, for me is almost entirely sexual. And this occasionally gets me into these weird moments, like I'll be at kink events and someone will have this really cool kink toy and they'll be like, hey, I just got this cane. You want me to try it on you? And I'll be like, no thanks, not unless you're going to make me come. And I've had a couple of people look like they're thinking seriously about it, but frequently people just look confused, like, well, of course I can just hit you with this cane and it's a non-sexual thing, and like, why does it matter to you whether or not you orgasm in the process? Like, sorry, just not that interested. Like, the first time that I ended up needle bottoming for a friend, I had known her for a very long time. And we're pretty tight, but we never had sex at that point. And so I was like, hey, can you do this thing? She's like, yeah, that sounds great. And I was like, do you mind if I jerk off while you do it? She was like, I've never had anyone ask me that before. I was like, seriously? Like, needle bottoming isn't sexual for everybody? That's fascinating. I understand it's not sexual for everybody, but I was fascinated by the idea that it was apparently not sexual for most people who were doing it. Like, I'm really not interested in doing this in a context that doesn't involve sexual stimulation. She was like, yeah, that sounds hot. That sounds fun. Let's do it. And I did. It was great. We've done it several times since. But, you know, it really still strikes me to this day how funny it is that apparently most people with needle bottoming, like, aren't trying to get off from the experience. Whereas my notion of needle bottoming is like, well... it's basically like perfect sex, because I'm the kind of masochist for whom that's true. The other thing I found in my survey was that while it's true that the BDSM gets more decoupled from sex for people who become more and more involved in the scene, that their sex actually gets kinkier. And I found this in a couple of different ways statistically on my survey. But they basically said that more and more that their sex involved kink. And frequently people who are heavily involved in the scene were like, yeah, actually, I don't even really know anymore how to have vanilla sex, which I would also say is increasingly true for me as well, that I really struggle at this point to have sex completely outside of a kink context, which was not true when I first got into the scene. And I think that that's not entirely uncommon for people like me who spend a great deal of time in the scene. And the other thing that's really complicated about this is there are a group of people who I refer to as kink sexual, who for whom kink is the defining aspect of their sexual orientation. I encounter quite a lot of these people in the BDSM scene. And for some of them, literally, it overwhelms other aspects of their sexual orientation. Like, they're attracted to DOMs. And it's not about their gender. It's not about their biological sex. It's just about how good a DOM they are. You know, they're attracted to subs. And it doesn't matter, like, what gender or sex they are. They're attracted to subs. This is a slightly distinct thing, by the way, I mean from a fetish. So a traditional fetish is like a very specific thing that somebody's into. But to me, kink sexual is much broader than that. But for those of you wondering, well, okay, if people aren't doing it for sex, what the fuck reason are they doing it for? I asked a lot of questions about this on my survey to try to gauge, like, what were the things that people found to be the most compelling. And the most popular reason, I think it even won over sex for people with high involvement, was connection, feelings of emotional closeness, including love. 90% of people with high scene involvement said that that was one of their major motivations for doing BDSM. Other things include, relatedly, emotional pleasure and satisfaction, including non-sexual sadism, for which 86% of people in high scene involvement said that they were doing it. Adrenaline and physical excitement, where 74% of people said that was one of the reasons they were doing it. Altered mental state, including subspace and dom space, which was 83% of people with high scene involvement. Physical or emotional challenge, which was 67% of people with high scene involvement. Service, giving or receiving, which was 69% of people with high scene involvement. Satisfying primal urges, which was 55% of people with high scene involvement. Spiritual fulfillment, including meditation, ordeal, and catharsis, was 45% of people with high scene involvement. And my favorite of this list is role play, which I just wrote as role play, where only 33% of people with high scene involvement said that they were into it. But that was like the only one where it was more popular for people with low scene involvement than people with high scene involvement. I think there's a lot of reasons why that comes to be, but part of it is that the BDSM scene really places a high premium on the idea of authenticity. And so like when people do role play in the kink scene, they tend to really emphasize authenticity much more than role play. And I know for myself, I used to engage in a lot more what I would describe as role play before I became involved in the BDSM scene, and then I slowly drifted away from it, and I couldn't even really explain why. But I know it's true. And the last thing that I listed on my survey why people gave was aesthetics, including aesthetic objectification, artistry, and visual pleasure, which was 56% of people with high scene involvement. Taking pretty photos is a pretty popular reason why a lot of people like to engage in BDSM, but it's not just pretty pictures, right? It's turning another person into your canvas. And all of those things can be, or not, sexual and erotic to some degree. But it's really interesting to me to see how, for me personally, I've acquired so many more motivations for doing BDSM over time. I think I would probably check almost all of those boxes at this point. And also, yet still remains primarily sexual to me. And I've watched as the BDSM subculture has slowly evolved in some pretty weird and complicated ways. I would say that post-COVID overall, the public BDSM scene is not doing great. A lot of clubs have closed. There aren't that many left that are standing BDSM dungeons. And meanwhile, a lot of rope studios, which are definitely non-sexual spaces, have opened up. And so I wonder where things are going from here. Definitely my book, which was published in 2022, but as I said, is based on survey data from 2017 and interview data from 2012, is a historical document at this point. This is not the scene that you can walk out and find anymore that I was observing then. And I still get to go to parties here in DC that are like this because DC remains one of the most vibrant BDSM scenes in the country for now. Knock on wood, we'll see if it stays. The DC area has two standing dungeons, which is quite extravagant compared to most of the rest of the country, and also is home to three really big kink events in addition to quite a number of smaller ones. And so the BDSM scene here in DC is very active in a way that it's just not the same in other parts of the country. And so as you go to different parts of the country, you see different things about the sexual worlds of them. And a lot of the sexualities of various BDSM scenes can be heavily influenced by the culture of their local dungeon, right? Like whether or not that allows sex. And also that comes to affect whether or not a local BDSM scene is very focused on private parties or not, since frequently the scenes that are more anti-sex tend to have more private parties because people want to be able to have sex at them, even though ironically they mostly don't. I'm gonna conclude this episode with one of my early days stories. So this was probably in 2010, maybe, that I was still very new to the BDSM scene. And I was very confused and disappointed that the parties that I kept going to had so little sex happening at them. Because, as far as I was concerned, my main motivation for being there was to have kinky sex and ideally plenty of group sex. And I didn't really like swinger culture. I might have a different opinion about it now. I hear things have changed. But back then, it was a long time ago, and it was not terribly friendly to bisexual men, which is a group of people who I find very hot. And so I wasn't particularly interested in joining up with swinger culture, and I also really liked the consent focus of BDSM subculture, which was part of why I wanted to stick around there. So I kept going to kink parties, even though I had a pretty ambivalent relationship with BDSM itself at that point. And I was disappointed by how much sex wasn't happening there. So there was a party. To describe it as a house party would be inaccurate because this was kind of a professional house, sort of. So let's call it a professional house party was happening. And it was still like very early days in my life as a scene. And I was like, you know, I'm just going to post on FetLife on the group chat for that because that was a thing that people actually used to pay attention to back then. Say, hey, who's up for an orgy tonight? I'm going to start one. And I really anticipated what the effect of that would be, because I was like, oh, you know, maybe, maybe it'll get me what I want. In truth, I threw that orgy entirely so I could pick up a guy. It worked. I dated him for several years, but I was like, I just want to see whether or not I can make this happen. And the answer was yes. It was very small, but I did manage to make a spontaneous orgy happen at this kink party. But the thing that really amused me was that at that party and for quite some time afterwards, I was known as Orgy Girl. And it really highlighted for me how much this wasn't the normal thing to do. I had broken a norm by suggesting at this house party that totally allowed sex, that we should have an orgy. This wasn't what normal people there did. And that has really been my job in the BDSM scene in a lot of places that I've gone ever since. These days, frequently when I go to major kink events, my job is literally to host the orgies officially for the event. So I've learned how to do it better than I certainly knew how to do it back then. But it really struck me how much that wasn't what was the standard thing to do. And whenever I host parties myself at my house nowadays, like even still trying to get the kink part of the evening to match up with the orgy part of the evening is pretty hard. People are not accustomed to combining these two things as much as I always imagine in my head that they might be, and frankly, how much I want them to be. And so, one of the things that I teach at a lot of these kink events that I go to is a class called Fucking Mean. It's about like how to have really mean, kinky sex, basically. And frequently, people haven't always put a lot of thought into it. Obviously, the people who show up that class tend to be people who put more thought into it. But overall, I find that that's not necessarily a very high priority for a lot of people in the scene. And that has stayed true throughout my journey in the kink scene. Like, it's always been a little bit weird to be the orgy girl. And I hope that this has given you some illumination on the strange dynamic relationship that exists between sex and BDSM. But more than anything, I would just always say whenever anyone asks, it's complicated. Anyone who tries to give you a simplistic answer is cheating. Don't believe them. Defining sex is hard. Defining BDSM is hard. Defining kink is hard. These are not simple things. And so to just say BDSM is not sexual, that doesn't really mean much. I would go with at best, technically that's true. But is that terribly informative? And the answer is no. And, you know, every time I talk to kink organizers who are like, oh, well, you know, if we have sex there, there'll be all these people who won't show up. And I'm like, well, the numbers that I have suggest that that's not true. Right? There's some very loud people sometimes online who say that they're upset about BDSM parties, including sex. But, you know, by and large, it's pretty easy to create spaces for people that are more welcoming if that's your ultimate goal. And you know, more and more I've seen in like the very queer friendly kink events that I've been to, they'll try to create like a separate small no sex dungeon basically to try to create, you know, safe spaces for people for whom that's a goal. By and large, kinksters tend to like sex with their BDSM. They just don't tend to do it much in public. And the other thing I would add to that that I think gets lost a lot in these conversations is that kinksters on the whole at BDSM events tend to be fairly dry. Like people don't usually get very drunk there. I talk about this a fair bit in my book as well. You know, so many people literally come to the scene to get sober. And so BDSM events, being drunk is strongly discouraged. It's a great way to get kicked out. Drunken BDSM play is extremely looked down on. But ironically, I would say most kinksters on average still prefer to drink before they have sex, just like vanilla people do. They just don't usually do it drunk. And so, one of the complications that you see, especially for people having sex in public at BDSM events, is this tension between not drinking before you kink, but still preferring to drink at least a little bit before you fuck. And that definitely creates some trouble for party organizers who are trying to make their kinky sex events happen. And then the last thing is, even people who really like to kink and fuck don't necessarily like to do both in public, right? In front of other people. So there's this heavy element of exhibitionism that ends up influencing a lot of things that go on in the BDSM scene. Thank you all for listening, and I hope that you've learned something fun and interesting about sex and BDSM.